Hi, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the podcast that comes in peace. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I am joined tonight once again by my good friend, movie aficionado, bearded wonder, by curious human being, Alex Lawson. How are you, sir?
I'm terrific. That's probably the most accurate description anyone has levied.
I got it right off of your Facebook.
You know, straight from the source. Absolutely.
Speaking of Facebook, hey, you can find F This Movie on Facebook at facebook.com/F This Movie and on Twitter at twitter.com/F This Movie, where we play fun games. And you can find our site, as always, at fthismovie.blogspot.com. And you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Alex.
Yes.
Have you seen anything good lately?
I've seen some stuff. I saw recently The Tree of Life.
That counts as stuff. Tell me about The Tree of Life.
I should actually start over. I shouldn't say I saw The Tree of Life. More okay. Like the Tree of Life recently happened.
Nice. Okay.
I have some thoughts on it. To some extent, I feel like your opinion of The Tree of Life depends on where you come down on the whole Terrence Malick thing.
Okay.
I've always been a big fan of his, and I like The Tree of Life a lot, but at the same time, with everything else he's ever made, you might as well slap a big fat, it's not for everyone.
Yeah, sticker, right.
I actually saw a really funny thing on the internet, some movie theater in, I want to say North Carolina, I could be wrong.
Okay.
Like, had to put up a disclaimer on the outside of
refunds, right?
Yeah.
I heard about that. Yeah,
it had this long-winded, like, The Tree of Life does not follow a traditional narrative structure. And
see, that's crazy that you have to sit there. I remember when we saw Rachel Getting Married, it had a no refunds thing, but I think that had to do with the theater that we saw it at, which catered largely to an elderly population, and the fact that the movie is shot all handheld. And I think the two didn't work together. And so the theater had posted signs saying it's shot handheld. That is deliberate. We will not be issuing refunds for the movie. But yeah, that's fascinating that in Tree of Life, that this long sign, like Terrence Malick as a filmmaker.
Yeah.
Let me go back to Badlands. That's pretty funny. But you liked it.
I liked it a lot. It's you know, I mean, the book on him is, you know, hasn't changed in the last however, what, 30 or 40 years he's been making movies. It's
all breathtaking. Five of them.
Yeah, right. It's breathtaking to watch. It's immaculately shot. The music is very good. Except as he's gotten older, I feel like his messages are becoming all the more ambitious, and never is that truer than in Tree of Life. Okay. There are just, have you seen it yet, by the way?
I have not, no.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, I mean, it's not, you've read some things, though, I imagine.
Sure.
No? Or have you? Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, there's just, the closest thing there is to a narrative, of course, is the story of this young boy in Texas in, like, the 50s who has this very demanding father played by Brad Pitt. And that's sort of toggled between seeing that boy grown up as a man, played by Sean Penn, and he's just sort of, you know, as a result of his experiences, just sort of wandering, lost in the world. But even that is a tenuous, what you would call a plot. But then, of course, mixed in there, there's just all sorts of ruminations about the creation of the universe and the end of times, and there are dinosaurs.
Sure.
In the movie.
Dinosaurs make any movie better.
Yeah. And I want to say something about the dinosaurs. And a lot of people have written about this, and I won't be saying anything terribly original. And why would I in this part of the show? It was interesting. It was really fascinating to watch a Terrence Malick movie that had, like, noticeable CGI.
Oh, okay.
It's not – and I only say noticeable – because you know, because it's a dinosaur, and
because
you know,
because there
in
are
your
no
head,
dinosaurs.
There are no dinosaurs, and it was clearly not a model.
Would you be willing, when you say dinosaurs, could you say it like that little amber mosquito in Jurassic Park?
See, here's the thing about the way Terrence Malick uses dinosaurs.
Thank you.
No,
that's outstanding. No,
even dinosaur. No,
dinosaurs. Anyway,
there's plenty of dino DNA all over Tree of Life. Anyway, it's thanks for rerouting the conversation. It's very good. Any, you know, if you consider yourself a lover of, you know, sort of non-traditional, non-linear storylines, as that movie theater would say, I would definitely check out Tree of Life. For crying out loud, the guy only makes movies every 15 years.
Yeah, right. Although he's had two this decade. That's like a record. Yeah, and he's already working on his number. Is his third.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, I don't know if he's like reinvigorated by, God knows what. I mean, I don't know what could have, I don't know what could have cropped up in his head to make him. But yeah, I mean, check out Tree of Life.
All right, will do.
Whenever it gets out near you. What else did I want to talk about? Sorry. And then this is my last one, and then you can go. Similar to Tree of Life, I recently caught the beginning, and then I had to go. That's why I only watched the beginning. I watched the beginning of Predator 2.
Oh, sure.
You know, you see what I'm saying? Very similar.
Yeah.
I don't have a whole lot of new things to say about Predator 2.
Yeah.
That people probably haven't said, but I do want to say it's been a while since I've seen the beginning. Have you seen Predator 2 lately?
I feel like I have, yeah.
Anyway, it starts out with like a really actually impressive action set piece. There's just this shootout between the LAPD and these Colombian drug dealers who are like on these actors, by the way, are like on another planet. You know, if you get my I'm foreshadowing for the content of the podcast. They are like wild-eyed animal types. I don't know.
Well, listen, it takes place in the futuristic war zone of 1997.
Evan, you're correct. Good recall. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make, and this is something that never struck me before and really hit me now. So the police are like getting their ass kicked by this Colombian, you know, drug ring. They're outmanned, outgunned, and all this. And then Danny Glover is the protagonist of the movie, and he comes rolling. They give him this hero's entrance. And he comes rolling up in his car, and he eventually just like drives straight into their like barricade and like kills five of the guys, and he doesn't play against the rules and he disobeys the order of his captain. And it's so weird because he is Roger Murtaugh.
Yeah,
I know it takes place in 1997. I can't remember when Predator 2 actually came out.
90.
Yeah, and so that was after Lethal Weapon. It's so weird.
Two Lethal Weapons, yeah.
Yeah, it's like they go out of their way. I'm not saying like any sort of joke or statement is being made. I think it's like a coincidence mostly. But it was really, it really struck me this time is that he's just pulling a total,
Riggs.
You know, Martin Riggs act.
Pulling a Riggs.
Like to a T.
Shooting everyone at the Christmas tree lot. It's weird that for 3 years in our nation's history, Danny Glover was an action hero.
Yeah, it totally, well, I mean, but I understand that he's an action hero in the Lethal Weapon movies because he's like playing the unwitting action hero. In Predator 2, he is like
super cop.
A super
Mike
cop.
Harrigan, right?
Mike Harrigan. Yeah. You are recalling much more about this than the guy who saw it 2 days ago. So yeah, that's what I've been consuming lately.
Very nice. All right. I don't have much to say. I will say I saw Cars 2. Because my wife and I took our son to see his first movie, and it was Cars 2. And it's sad that, like, he's of the age, finally, where he can go to a movie, and it happens to be the worst Pixar movie. But also, he is very interested in the original Cars, and not really any of the other Pixar movies, and that's a bummer. But again, he's 2, and he likes cars, you know? He's not drawn in by the story. So we took him to see Cars 2, and he did pretty well. He got a little bored about halfway through, and then again a little bit at the end. It's not good, I don't think, but I don't think it's like horrible. You know, the problem is that it's being compared not to other animated films, but to other Pixar films. And so by comparison, it's way worse, you know, because it definitely panders and it's not really even about anything. I mean, at least the original Cars was sort of about this nostalgia for a past era and all this when life was slower and blah, blah, blah. And this isn't about anything, really. It's just about Larry the Cable Guy doing a voice and fart jokes and cars who are spies in Japan. The animation is still super sophisticated, if nothing else. that puts it above a lot of the other, you know, Fox or DreamWorks sort of animated movies. But it's not good, but I don't think it's as bad as... I think there was a little bit of, like, an excitement on the part of the critical community to be like, Pixar finally made a bad movie. Let's jump on this. You know, not that people are necessarily looking to take them down, but they're just waiting for them to fail.
There's an astonishing lack of originality. Like, I haven't seen it, by the way.
Yeah.
There's an astonishing lack of originality about the way it's being sort of critiqued, I think.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that the things I'm reading aren't these people's, like, actual reactions to the film, and that's if that's how they felt and that's what they're writing, that's fine. But I do agree that there is sort of this party line that everyone's just sort of chanting about it. You know, the people at Pixar are in fact human and all that, and they they're fallible and all that.
It feels like a movie that was sort of made to cash in a little bit on Cars, the success of the movie and with the merchandising, because it's like a movie almost for no one, because it's like too kind of goofy and the jokes are too dumb for like adults. But then the kids, I'm just like, the plot is so overly complicated with all this spy nonsense and alternative fuel. And I don't know who it's for. I don't feel like as a kid, I'd be able to follow that as like a young kid, I'd really be able to follow that plot.
Mm-hmm.
But all the jokes and the look of the film is pitched at really young kids. It's not pitched at like 8 and 9 year olds, you know?
Yeah. And again, I haven't seen it, so I just have one question.
Yes,
I was talking about this with a friend of mine, and he said that he read somewhere that a lot of it takes place in Japan, correct?
Yeah.
And do they eat? Do the cars eat sushi in the movie?
Wasabi. One of the cars eats wasabi. I don't remember a car eating sushi.
That is really troubling to me, because my thing with Cars, even the first Cars, has always been, where are the people?
Right.
Where are the people?
Right.
It honestly freaks me out. And I know it's for kids, and I know the kids don't care. But every other Pixar movie has people in it in some capacity.
Well, this obviously takes place in some sort of... It's not like when we're not looking, our cars can talk. You know, it's like this planet that is only cars.
Well, that is a planet that frightens me.
It's a weird thing, though, to see a movie with your kid, because A, you're not really paying as close attention to the movie as you would normally, because you're always sort of checking out his reaction. How's he doing? Is he bored? Is he enjoying himself? And you're more focused on that than on the movie. So in that sense, I get, maybe it's good that it was Cars 2, because I don't really need to pay attention, because it has the word Cars and then the word 2 after it. So those two things are not great. And besides that, I've seen some other stuff, but I won't talk about it, because obviously I'll talk about the movie that will segue us into what we're talking about tonight.
Go for it.
I saw Super 8 again.
Okay.
And now you saw Super 8.
I did.
Quickly weigh in on your thoughts about Super 8.
Yeah.
We did a whole podcast on it, so we won't rehash it.
And that was it. That was a tremendous podcast.
Thank you. I coughed a little bit too often, I felt like.
A little bit too much. There was a lot of coughing. Anyway, Super 8. I really love Super 8.
Okay. Awesome.
That's it.
Great. Well, that's great, because tonight we are talking about alien invasion movies, because, man, this is sort of the summer of the alien invasion between Super 8 and even Green Lantern had sort of elements of alien invasion.
Sure.
As we're recording this podcast, about 5 or 20 minutes ago, screenings of Transformers Dark of the Moon just started. That sort of counts as an alien invasion movie. We're a few weeks out from Cowboys and Aliens.
Correct.
So there's a ton of alien invasion stuff going on right now. And this
That's where I was going.
Right. Originally a show we were going to do, and it ended up falling through back when Battle Los Angeles came out.
Yeah.
Which maybe is for the best, because I find that I don't have a lot to say about Battle Los Angeles.
A little dismayed when that fell through, because you know we just couldn't get it worked out. But I actually had a lot of stuff to say about
positive or negative.
Oh, very negative. I think that's like really really awful.
Yeah, I didn't like that movie at all.
I was going to talk about this a little later, but at no point it gets nothing right. There are certain things that you have to get right for these alien movies to work. And that gets none of it right. The characters aren't terribly likable or interesting. They don't have to be likable, but they're not interesting either. The set pieces are noisy and confusing, and furthermore, their creature design is absent.
I don't remember the aliens at all, actually.
The only time it gets like, you know, he turned his head, by the way, you guys, on that.
Thank you. I did. And that was, I was clearing my throat. I wasn't coughing.
All right. Yeah. Anyway, there is no like money shot, if you will, where you see the fig, like it's Aaron Eckhart, like angrily tearing open. You remember that scene?
Oh,
like,
yeah. I remember that.
Body armor and like trying to, it's so fucking bad. And just ugly and sort of mean and like jingoistic in a way that, I don't mean to go political on you, but like all that Marine.
I think the people that liked it because A, it really felt like a video game, which I think is to its detriment. I think other people would see that as a positive. To me, that was a kind of a negative. Because it was like watching somebody, it wasn't even like you playing a video game. It was like watching somebody else play a boring video game. And they like it sort of as a like a combat film that's just sort of nothing but action. But you can point to other, you know, Starship Troopers, I think, works better as a combat film that is about an alien invasion. Aliens works better as a combat film that's not an alien invasion, but I mean...
infinitely so,
Right, so I think there's a way to do it. I just, Battle Los Angeles did not do it for me.
No.
But let's talk about the movies that did do it for us.
Correct.
Let's talk about sort of five of our favorites in the alien invasion genre. And now, once again, as is my way, when we do these list shows, I've attempted to not... We haven't seen one another's lists, but
we have not.
I have sort of attempted to make choices that I think, like, okay, I don't think this will be on Alex's list, so that we're not... So that we get 10 movies instead of 5, basically. And you had said in an email that we were going back and forth on sort of what are the parameters for this, and I think you came down with just like any movie that has an alien coming to Earth, basically, right?
That is what I emailed you, and I don't mean to pull the rug out from you, but I did sort of end up skewing towards more combative.
Like the hostile alien.
The hostile alien.
I went totally that way, so that's fine.
Okay, well, good. Like, I mean, I'll just, spoiler alert for this F This Movie podcast, E.T. is not on my list, even though I said in that email to you that E.T. was back in play. I sort of hedged on that after the fact, because, I don't know, it felt not in, even having sent that to you, it felt not in the spirit of what we were trying to do. So mine are all combative. Hostile.
Well, aliens. Yeah, just the use of the word invasion. Like, I would never call E.T. an alien invasion movie.
Exactly.
He's invading our hearts.
Yeah. Well, he is our hearts and minds and our movie going consciousness, because E.T. is better than any of the movies I've listed here, because it's a great movie.
It is very good. Real quick, I got to go back to something. We were talking about Battle Los Angeles, and I failed to point out the last time we did a podcast, we talked about Last Airbender, and you had talked about the trailer looked okay and the movie was terrible. And then on Facebook, you did that thing like, hey, any trailers that look great for and the movies were terrible. Battle Los Angeles, great example.
That's a perfect example. That was,
such a good trailer, and I was very let down by that movie. Yeah,
I was so intrigued. The music was great. All of their images work, except when you realize when you see the movie that and this is the problem with a lot of good trailers. Not the case with the Last Airbender trailer, because they didn't use footage from the movie, but with a lot of trailers that are great and then the movie lets you down, is because the trailer is like the best that it has to offer, and only good because like trailers, the way they're editing trailers these days, it's like becoming another like art form. If you watch old movie trailers, it's like nothing. It's like a narrator and clips from the movie.
Right. Well, they give everything away, but also I think the inverse is happening, where movies are being cut like trailers. And so you see the shots, you know, Super 8 is a good example, I think, of a really good trailer. Obviously, I've gone on and on about how much I love that trailer. And there are images in that movie that you think, gosh, what is happening there? And then you like them even better in the context of the movie. And Battle Los Angeles, when I saw the trailer, it's a lot of neat images. And you're like, boy, I wonder in the context of this movie. Because, you assume, like, they're probably showing me a lot of great stuff. But I'll bet in the context of the movie, that's even cooler. But then when you see the movie, like, that is the context, basically. It's just shots butting up against one another.
doesn't all pan out.
It's not part of a bigger thing. It's just like, and then we have a shot of this, and then a shot of this, and then a shot of this, and it feels like a trailer. I mean, you know, Michael Bay is sort of the king of that.
Yeah.
Who shoots and cuts his movies like trailers.
Yep.
Which is why somebody pointed out in that Facebook thread that every Michael Bay movie, has a great trailer because, you know, including Transformers, that trailer totally, not the the latest one.
Oh yeah, it's great that with that music.
Yeah, and the, there's no way the movie is good, but that trailer is awesome.
It all works. Yeah, it's a great trailer.
All right, so let's go with your number five in the alien invasion genre.
Well, by the way, I didn't rank them.
No, I didn't either. But I'm just saying, you know, your fifth choice.
But I want to be clear on that because I don't want people to think that this is like a hierarchy. I'm starting with this one because we've talked about this before, and in fact, I can refer you all to a podcast that we did over a year ago.
I know the answer. I know the answer.
Yeah, you do. The first
Domino.
One.
Domino.
Yep, it's Domino. Keira Knightley, sort of weird looking, might be an alien. No, it's Signs, of course. It's M. Night Shyamalan's Signs from 2002. You know, I would, like I said, I would refer you to our podcast on that. It's from June 15th of last year.
Look at you with a date and everything.
I did. I went back. I did show prep on the F This Movie set. the things that I like about Signs now are the same as why I liked it then. I just think it's a very interesting and personal way to tell a story like that I've never seen before. And you get also there just sort of a parable of a man who's lost his faith and gets it back in a way that if I read that pitch on a piece of paper, I'd think that was really corny and stupid, but the movie has a lot of moments in it that just really earn that part of the story.
Now, a lot of people might say that even in the movie, it's really corny and stupid.
And that's fine. And that's where we sort of differ. In that scene where the little Culkin boy, which one is it? Rory?
I believe that's Rory.
Yeah. And he's having the asthma attack, and then the asthma thing is very heavy handed and, you know, just sort of lazy writing anyway. But anyway, he's trying to sort of coax the breath back into his body, and he starts having that personal, angry conversation with God. Now, make all the jokes you want about Mel Gibson that you like and all of his, you know, religious proclivities. But I mean, I just, that is not where I saw that movie going at all. And in a way that really affects me when I watch it. So I still love Signs. It's a great alien invasion movie.
It is. Do you think his angry conversation with God should have been had through like a beaver puppet?
Yeah, and he should have, when he was saying, when he was telling God, "I hate you."
Yeah.
Have been doing it with the Bieber puppet, and he should have been a little more specific. He should have said, "I only hate the Old Testament version of you."
Okay, nice, but with a Cockney accent, right?
Absolutely, and with blue war face paint and perhaps a brogue. I don't know.
I still do like Signs, and the thing that you pointed out that speaks to me most about it is that I like that it's just this one, that it sticks with the one family, that it's like, here's just this one family reacting to this alien invasion that we assume is happening everywhere, but we're sticking in this one house, this one family, and I like that. It makes me think of a movie that isn't quite on my list, but it will lead into the movie that is on my list, and that is the Steven Spielberg remake of War of the Worlds from 2005,
yep,
which sort of plays a similar game in that it sticks with this one family, but it definitely opens up the scope a lot more. And it's
definitely,
so you really get a sense of like destruction and craziness, and the family is driving all over the place and running into people. And so it's not like they're secluded in this one house the way that it is in Signs. And I like that approach to stick with the one family. War of the Worlds is a tough movie for me because there are things in that movie that I think work so great. I mean, I think some of the stuff that Spielberg does in that movie is almost as good as anything he's ever done when it's really the really scary stuff in that movie.
Can I ask you to like give me an example? Because I don't like disagree, but I find that movie pretty forgettable, actually. I just don't Like
I think if you watched it again, you would be amazed by some of just the filmmaking, because I agree as a whole, a lot of it is forgettable. The second half falls apart. The movie has no third act. I mean, people come down on that movie for sort of a reveal that happens at the end involving a character that we thought was gone. And they're like, that's why they hate the movie. The problem is the movie has no third act whatsoever. The third act being like when we sort of fight back, you know, and it's just missing. It just ends.
It's very abrupt. Yeah.
All the stuff with Tim Robbins doesn't work. But I think the first like third of that movie is so great. And that first alien attack is some of just the scariest, most intense stuff that Spielberg's ever done.
I also do remember a really great image of now I'm remembering things as I'm trying to, where Dakota Fanning goes, I can't remember. She's like trying to, they're in the woods, and I can't remember if she was like finding a private place to use the restroom or whatever, but she's by that river and a body.
Yes.
Like, starts like going down the river, and it's just one. And then like dozens and dozens of them.
Yes.
That's cropped up in my head now. I remember that being like a really affecting visual.
That is a dark, dark
sort
of post 9/11 movie. And I think there's great stuff in it. And then there's stuff, unfortunately, like a lot of later era Spielberg, that is just like, this isn't working. But the original War of the Worlds from 1953 is on my list. Because it's one of the original, you know, like, and in the best possible way. It's not like you have to give a movie credit just for being first, because lots of movies are first but bad. But it's incredibly entertaining, and it has that great sort of Technicolor look, and the effects for the time were totally cutting edge. I think they still kind of hold up. I think the very first alien attack, especially for 1953, is scary and intense for the time. Again, there's just as much in that movie that kind of doesn't work as in the remake, but it doesn't work in a different way, where now it's sort of corny and goofy, and the remake is so like dark and mean-spirited. I mean, they have such different sort of approaches, and I guess if I'm going to watch one and acknowledge its shortcomings, I'll watch the one that doesn't make me hate humanity or fear for the future of humanity. You know, War of the Worlds is, the original is a much more sort of optimistic movie. It's great.
I have not seen it, and actually my whole list sort of skews a little newer, and I'll take my lashings for that, just because I'm young and naive, and I think the world started 30 years ago.
I almost put Super 8 on my list. You want to talk about newer? That movie came out a few weeks ago.
I almost did too. But to your, I'm not that familiar with even the H.G. Wells book.
I'm not either, unfortunately.
I would assume that the original is a more straightforward adaptation of that.
I don't think it is necessarily because I want to say the H.G. Wells version, and I apologize for being wrong about this. I do have the internet in front of me. I could look it up, but I want to say the H.G. Wells version takes place in like Victorian times.
I think that's right. Yeah.
And this movie does not at all. It takes place in 1953.
Can I? Oh, okay. Now I guess I have a question then, in terms of like the construct of the movie, because I haven't seen it, and then but beyond me just asking you a factual question about the movie that you can answer, I want to sort of see how it you know makes the movie better for you. The Tom Cruise War of the Worlds, the remake, like you said, I mean, it centers on a family, and the family is you know sort of the conduit for you experiencing the action. I would venture a guess that it's not like a family story in the original, but is it like a guy working for the government or like a scientist of some sort?
It's sort of that very typical 1950s square-jawed scientist hero and the girl who loves him. And, you know, it's that – it centers more on sort of a town than on a family, but there's definitely, you know, sort of the hero character. It's not like a family story.
Okay.
The way the Spielberg version is.
So. All right. My next one, number four, although not in order,
right?
Again, I almost didn't put it on because I'm kind of embarrassed, but then I said, no, I'm kind of not. And it's a staple of the kind of thing we're talking about, and I don't care. And it's Independence Day.
I'm going to interrupt you real quick just because, little preview for what's coming ahead on F This Movie. There may or may not be an entire podcast devoted to that movie in the very near future.
No. So I
did not put it on the list for that reason.
But
I would totally put it on the list.
Yeah.
That movie is terrible and I love it.
Me too. It makes the rounds on cable an awful lot these days, particularly on not just Independence Day, almost any federal holiday. Yeah, I've noticed.
Right.
They played on Memorial Day, they played on Veterans Day, and what better way to honor our heroes, really? It is the standard bearer for the noisy, expensive, sprawling alien invasion movie, is it not? I feel like attempts to do what Independence Day did since that have failed. The only thing that really comes to mind in that way is that awful movie from either last year or 2 years ago, Skyline. Did you see that movie?
I totally saw Skyline.
It's so, like, I mean, it's bad.
Isn't the word for Skyline.
No, I mean, but I mean, that is...
Yeah.
And then even beyond that, I can't even think of a movie that's really tried to duplicate the thing that Independence Day did in an effective way. And I can take away only from that everyone in the filmmaking community looked at Independence Day and said, that's as good as we can do that.
I don't even know that's it.
I'm sort of joking.
Right. I mean, obviously I think it's more like that was a fluke and we can't do that. And I think, you know, we're way too cynical now to try and do Independence Day again. I think Battle Los Angeles is a great example of someone trying to do Independence Day now, but you know, you have to change it for our 2011 sensibilities, and so it's just bleak and hateful and without fun at all, which Independence Day has a ton of fun. Independence Day might as well have been made in 1955. I mean,
that's a good point. Yeah, it is a relic, and you know, you watch it. There, I have so many thoughts, and we don't have to talk about it too much because I don't want you.
Yeah,
to
we step, shouldn't, right?
I don't want you to step on the show that you're going to do. So I'll just weigh in, and you can just sort of guide me or tell me to move on to something else. I mean, it's so eminently rewatchable. If I stumble across it, like I must finish it. It's so weird. I don't know. Like, I feel like people now think like it's in on the joke. I've heard people say that to me, that it's aware of how ridiculous it is. I don't think so. I think that was that 95?
95, yeah.
I think that's made with, like, every ounce of sincerity.
I think you might be right. I go back and forth. I mean, I think there's an acknowledgement of, like, this is kind of goofy and fun, but I don't think it's, like, self-parody, if that's what people are implying.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely things about it that are fun, and there's, like, moments of straight-up comedy,
right.
You know, which work to varying degrees. I'm basically pointing to one moment when I make that argument against people, and that's the Bill Pullman speech. I mean, that is something that no one takes seriously now, and
right.
It is like an oft-cited, you know, the go-to over-the-top stereotypical motivating speech.
Right.
But I mean, it just kind of works within the environment of that movie. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's definitely in keeping with the spirit of the movie. And yeah, I would agree that speech is not.
That's not a joke.
That's not self-aware. That's a European guy trying to stick something in because he thinks that this is what Americans want to hear in their big blockbuster entertainment. There's a ton of people that hate that movie and whose heads are exploding right now because you're saying so many good things about it. Even F This Movie's own Mike Pomero, not a fan of Independence Day at all.
Well, I'm not gonna disparage Mike's opinion, especially when he's not here to defend himself. Mm. But he's wrong.
I feel like I feel like this is the perfect time to disparage his opinion.
he's just flat out wrong. And again, I haven't heard his specific criticisms.
I haven't either.
I don't understand, and I know Mike is a smart guy, and he brings a lot to the sci-fi horror.
You know what? You know what I think his big problem? He's a huge Harry Connick Jr. fan.
Oh, jeez.
And he just felt like that Cajun crooner checked out of the movie far too early. Far too early.
I say the movie is braver for it. I think. I mean, that is the Samuel L. Jackson Deep Blue Sea corollary. I mean, like, he's there, and then he's just gone.
Yeah.
And you're like, where are we to turn for our heroes?
The Fresh Prince, that's where we turn.
Yeah, the answer is the Fresh Prince. And
we turn to Bel Air.
a star-making vehicle for the young man. I know he was exactly bad boys and stuff, but I mean, come on.
Did this predate, or is this the same summer, maybe?
As Bad Boys?
Yeah.
I'm almost certain Bad Boys came before.
Okay, you might be right. You know? Maybe like 94? I mean, it was close, if not...
I
think you're right. It was probably like 93 or 94.
This is the one. I mean, this is Will Smith on the July 4th weekend and forever, right. You know, for as many awful directions as that whole trend
went. Wild West.
And is going. Wild Wild West gets a really bad rap. We can talk about that
later.
Are
you kidding me?
Anyway, this is going to be a long show, so we can do a whole other podcast on this.
On Wild Wild West?
Or not.
The Last Airbender all over again. Except anyway. The Last Airbender didn't have a kick-ass theme song.
Maybe I'll contribute to... Oh, my God. I love that song.
So do I, but I hate that movie.
Okay, all right. Anyway.
Let's get off Independence Day.
What is your number four?
My number four is the original 1953 Invaders from Mars. I just realized that came out the same year as War of the Worlds. Crazy. Have you ever seen Invaders from Mars?
Of course not.
It's on Netflix Instant right now. You should totally see it.
Okay.
It would be way better if you saw it when you were like 8 or 9.
Sure.
Because genuinely, to an 8 or 9 year old, whether it was in 1953 or whenever I was 8 or 9 in the 80s, it's very scary because it's told completely from the point of view of this young kid who's watching as all of the authority figures in his life, including his teachers and his parents, become something else.
Wow.
I can very clearly tell that's not my mom and dad anymore. That's something has replaced them. And it's told just from that point of view. They go over this hill and they come back and there's something different. And it's really scary. It has a terrible ending that kind of shits the bed. I won't give away what it is, but it is very much sort of a template for that whole... I mean, Invasion of the Body Snatchers obviously does... the same thing, but that did come a couple years later. Of that whole, like, these people that I love are not these people anymore. That whole paranoid, very much of the 1950s and the Cold War sort of Red Scare. Exactly.
Red Scare, yeah,
who's a Russian and who's not. That sort of thing.
And again, I haven't seen it, so this will also be very interesting because I'll just be asking you factual questions about the movie. That sounds alarmingly, the way you're describing it, for, like to tell a story that way from that perspective, that sounds alarmingly cutting edge for the time.
Yeah. That's the thing. I think it really still holds up, you know, for that reason.
Because we just got done talking about the War of the Worlds, and you said it fits a very sort of stock narrative structure with the sort of anonymously handsome and intrepid scientist who's out for the truth or whatever. And this, at least to make it, well, A, from a child's perspective, and then, you know, B, the body possession movie, the idea that they are, not only are they here to kill us, they are here to, like, become us in a sense.
Right, and to do it to the kid's parents. I mean, that really, as a kid, that freaks you out because that, you know, that breaks almost a law of movies, you know, like you're used to seeing certain things are, you know, there's still balance to the world. But when you take away the kid's parents, that really, you're like, oh, no one is safe at all. it's like, it would be like if Harry Connick Jr. was in a movie. Okay. Can you picture it?
I'm totally with you.
About 40 minutes in, something happens to Harry Connick Jr.
And who do we turn to for our heroes?
Yeah, Goldblum, playing the skeptical scientist.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, I just described every Jeff Goldblum movie.
Correct. Well, that sounds great, and you say it's on Netflix Instant?
It's on Netflix Instant. Unfortunately, the transfer on there is kind of bad, but what can you do?
Oh, yeah.
It's a good movie, and I will say, and this will really anger some people, I do not hate Toby Hooper remade Invaders from Mars in 86.
Okay.
And that movie is universally reviled. I actually find things to like in that movie. And I'm finding the older I get, I'm becoming more and more of like a Toby Hooper apologist because movies that people don't like of his, I'm like, no, I actually kind of like that movie. And I actually kind of like the remake. It goes a very different way. It takes the plot structure exactly the same, but it turns it very much into sort of a campy comedy almost.
I have a question about Toby Hooper's Invaders.
Yes, sir.
You like it, and a lot of people don't.
Yes.
But does it have, I'm a little nonplussed because does it have some sort of catchy hip hop theme song that I'm not aware of?
Let me think. I believe it does. I believe Kool Moe Dee recorded the Invaders from Mars rap that plays just over the end credits.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Anyway, I'm not even sure if that was a competent callback for everyone else. you can cut out that attempt at a joke if you want. But I...
So Invaders from Mars is my second pick.
Is the Tobey Hooper Invaders from Mars on Netflix instant?
It is not. It is not. It is available on DVD, but only as like a B-side on like one of those MGM double feature discs. I have the laser disc, but...
Sounds like they really put all the capabilities of their marketing machine behind...
It tanked. It was one of the, I guess, one of the last of sort of the Canon movies that the Canon Studios put out in the 80s. But
okay.
What can you do? Next!
Anyway, the next stop on the freight train that is on a collision course with Alex Lawson's movie Credibility...
I thought you were going to say that teacher from Gremlins pickup truck.
Yes, much in that fashion.
If I don't know. You already came out as a Wild Wild West fan. So how?
Well,
much...
wait. If my ringing endorsement of Wild Wild West was not enough to anger what few listeners we have,
unless your next choice is either Spaced Invaders or Mac and Me, I think you're going to be okay.
Mac and Me did actually cross my mind, not in getting on the list, but yeah. I was just. When you start these things, I just start thinking of any alien movie. And then
You immediately go to Mac and Me, which is on Netflix Instant. The star of which came to my junior high the year Mac and Me, like that was the only celebrity encounter. He wheeled his wheelchair into the cafeteria in junior high. I didn't go over to meet him. Jay McInerney, I remember his name. Jay McInerney wrote Bright Lights, Big City. No. I don't remember his name.
So the actor in Mac and Me is really in a wheelchair?
Yes. Did you think that was just for the part?
I mean, kind of. Yeah.
Jade Calgary. I said Jay McInerney. Jade Calgary, which is not a name that any human actually has. That's such a station.
Adult film star or something. Anyway.
Yeah, he came to my school to promote Mac and Me, and still I don't think anybody went.
He came to your school in Elk Grove, Illinois to promote Mac and Me?
Yeah. All right. Okay. We got all the stars, man. We got Jewel before she was famous. Come on.
Talk about all the capabilities of your marketing machine.
Yeah.
Just combing.
Literally door to door.
Combing the northwest suburbs of Chicago. Anyway, okay. The number three alien invasion movie on my list is a 1998 entry from Robert Rodriguez entitled The Faculty.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I really love The Faculty. Try to contain yourself. What you have in The Faculty is, I mean, just the alien version of the late 90s Kevin Williamson.
Well, it's The Breakfast Club with aliens.
No, it's not. It's yes, so much it more is. Complicated than that.
No, he went and watched The Breakfast Club, and he said, I need one of these, one of these, one of these, one of these. Right?
Yeah. But it's better, though, because...
Mm.
I'm on record. I'm saying I'm going to go right here and say The Faculty is a better movie than The Breakfast Club, and I'll tell you why. Because while The Breakfast Club has, you know, these sort of very general
state, I just shit in my pants, by the way.
While The Breakfast Club has these sort of very general, like, sentiments about, like, we're all sort of our own individual people, and they sort of, you know, learn about what it's like to be okay with yourself. The characters in The Faculty also learn that lesson, but they are forced to learn it by a race of beings that are trying to make them all the same. I'm actually not kidding about this now. I think that it takes a lot of what you get from high school movies about class and order and, you know, just sort of, you know, if you want to say like gender roles or, you know, just sort of genotypes or whatever. I think that it's a really interesting way to arrive at the same conclusion that every high school movie arrives at. Fine. I'll give you that.
Which is what again? Because I think you're mischaracterizing what The Breakfast Club is about. I mean, The Breakfast Club is actually, we're not so different after all. It's not about necessarily celebrating our differences. it's about finding our similarities.
Yeah, maybe, but I mean...
No, not maybe, for sure. But and that's not to blow holes in your faculty theory, but, like, I'm still on board with your faculty theory. Keep going.
Anyway, yeah, maybe I...
Tell me about the part where Famke Janssen's head walks around the parking lot.
I mean, what are we...
Tell me about the part where Usher is a football player.
No, and I'm instead...
Tell me about the Harry Knowles cameo.
No. I'm instead going to tell you about the part where Jon Stewart gets a pen full of cocaine in his eye.
It's not cocaine. It's a diuretic, right?
Yeah. It's a diuretic. anyway, I really like the faculty.
By the way, I kind of like the faculty, too. Like, that's a fine night at the movies, especially in 1998, as sort of Absolutely. That whole teen genre was...
That's what I'm saying. And I... And
was resurfacing and, with She's All That. It's like, here's somebody doing something kind of different with the teen genre, if only just to add aliens. That's fine.
This says, this is a lot more about, like, who I was at the time I saw it, and who I was with a 13-year-old boy is mm-hmm. what I was. Mm-hmm. And, like, I was the person who was getting all of those movies marketed right at him.
Right.
And I had, and even I had grown weary of it. And I said, oh, I'll take one of these with aliens in it. and I hadn't seen it before, and I haven't seen it since. Is there another Alien Invasion high school movie that I'm
not?
Jennifer's body, was she an alien, or she was just some
no,
kind of
No, she was possessed, yeah.
Okay. Anyway, I really enjoy it. I think a lot of the action set pieces work for me. I like the whole bit with Elijah Wood in the like having to climb on top of the bus and down into the bus, and like Famke Janssen then confronts him, and then you slowly start to see all the other you got me all twisted. All the other alien football players, you see their hands sort of start clouding up the bus windows, and you're like, well, how the hell is he gonna get out of this? And then of course he gets out of it because he climbs out the top.
Yeah, it's probably been like at least 10 years since I've seen that movie, but
I don't mean to be called, well, you it's been at least 10 years since you saw it, and you rattled off like three hilarious things that happened in the movie.
I've seen it a couple times, I'm not gonna lie.
it's in really good fun. They have this great sort of cold opening where the immaculately cast Robert Patrick as the the freaky ass gym teacher and coach, who is one of the first to be turned in, maybe even the first, if I'm recalling it correctly. Doesn't he find the thing?
I believe so.
On the field, and then he's like the guy.
The cold open is him and Piper Laurie and B.B. Newworth, right?
Correct. And okay. He is chasing B.B. Newworth around, and he's terrorizing her and whatever. And he puts the pencil through her hand.
Yeah.
Which just really shook me.
Right, but then the twist is like that Piper Laurie stabs her, right?
Yeah, but you didn't...
but at no other point in the movie are they like picking up weapons and murdering people when they're taken over by aliens. You know what I mean? Like that was almost like they went back and shot that after the fact. Like, we need something exciting to open the movie, because it actually has nothing to do with the rest of the movie in terms of what they're doing. Am I wrong?
Well, I'm trying to remember how they... You may be right. I'm trying to remember other scenes in which they show how they kill them. I mean, I know that they take them over, but I don't know if...
But they don't even kill anybody, right? They just take them over. They don't kill them, I don't think. Maybe you're right. Because at the end of the movie, everybody's still alive. I mean, all of the characters that we... including the one whose head came off and crawled around the parking lot is still alive, just so she can date her student.
Well, now you're really blowing some holes in
my tag. Let me just ask you this question, and then we'll move off the faculty. Jordana Brewster or Clea DuVall?
Oh, I have to find myself squarely in the Jordana Brewster camp, yeah. I think.
I think at the time, and possibly still when I watched that movie, I would go the other way. But I always went Ally Sheedy over Molly Ringwald, too, so...
You mean in that movie where they decide that they are not all the same? Is that
correct? Correct. Yeah. Where they celebrate their differences. My next choice. What the hell is my next choice? It's listen. All right. So here's the issue, right?
All right.
I was going to go with Invasion of the Body Snatchers, not the original. The Don Siegel one is great. Kevin McCarthy is the man. I was actually going to go with the 1978 Philip Kaufman version because it's messed up. Did you ever see it?
It's on my list, Patrick.
Okay, it's fine. Goldblum also in that movie.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. Crazy dog monster. Brooke Adams gets taken over. It's freaky. There's so much to like in that movie. I really, really, really like that movie.
Okay.
But in my heart of hearts, and here's the issue I ran into, I didn't want to choose two movies from the same director, but I had to do it. Because okay. I felt I would be remiss if I failed to mention 1988's They Live, starring Rowdy Roddy Piper as John Nada. Just a great, super overtly political alien invasion movie, whether or not you agree with the politics. It has that insane fist fight. It has Roddy Piper being the ultimate action hero. And just a great concept that aliens are taking over and they're sort of the rich upper class Republican, you know, the ruling class is actually, they're just aliens who are receiving messages via billboards and magazines.
Yeah, I've seen that movie. I've only seen it once.
It is available on Netflix Instant.
All right. And everybody should check it out if they haven't seen it.
Yes.
Although I would imagine most of our, the way our audience skews, I bet most of them have seen it.
I should hope so.
And that's a compliment, by the way.
Yeah, to
all the listeners. I feel like we should be sort of a little more forthcoming with our audience, though. You are just a huge Roddy Roddy Piper fan.
Absolutely. I love Roddy Roddy Piper, and he has never been... listen, I like Hell Comes to Frogtown, I'm not going to lie, but never has he had a better role than John Nada. He has just great one-liners. Obviously, the one everybody always points to is I've come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. But he's got some other great ones. I take them off, you look fine. I put them on, formaldehyde face, man, which is not a good line, but the way he sells it, I'm just like, that's Roddy Roddy Piper, man. He's the
Absolutely.
Shit. So yeah, I love They Live.
I don't have much memory of it. I think I saw it when I was like 9 or 10 or something. And I don't have any movies on my list that, well, except I guess maybe for Independence Day, and well, to some extent, the faculty, but none of them that are intended to be satirical, in a way that They Live is, and while it seems a very easy metaphor, or let's say it seems like a very easy genre in which to conduct, you know, metaphor about, you know, whether you're talking about, you know, the Red Scare in the 50s, like has been done, or, you know, just the sort of more general class warfare, like you're talking about. I feel like there aren't that many good, like, satires that I can think of in the alien invasion genre, mm-hmm. and They Live is definitely one of them. The only other thing that's even kind of funny is a movie that's not on my list, almost made it, is Mars Attacks. And while that's funny, it's not really satirizing anything, I don't think. It's more of a...
Hold that thought.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway. So, spoiler alert for the rest of your list.
They Live is great, and I think it's... I want to say it's John Carpenter's last great movie, which is sad, because it was 25 years ago.
The... nice. 23
years ago.
Good save. John Carpenter's Vampire is not
25 years ago. No, not for me.
No,
there's things to like in that movie, but overall, I don't think that movie works.
Anyway,
well, I know what's next on your list, so go ahead.
Yeah, it's Invasion of the Body Snatchers, 1978,
nice.
And you touched on a lot of things that I like about it.
I touched on Brooke Adams
and the dog monster,
which
thing.
Nowhere else in the movie is there anything that disturbing looking, but then we just get this one shot of a scary dog, like,
nope.
Okay.
And yeah, that's a weird outlier. I love Leonard Nimoy in it. I love that he's involved in the movie. It gives the whole thing, even if, like, say what you want about if it's intentional or unintentional, it just adds to the sci-fi weirdness of the thing that he's on screen.
Right.
So, also, and I'll keep this, the reason that this is on the list, much like how I said with the faculty, it has a lot to do with when you see it. And I think I saw Invasion of the Body Snatchers far too young for what happens in it. I want to say I was like 8.
Wow.
That's
a scary movie.
It is very scary, and especially to an 8-year-old. And the reason it was most scary, and I'm not saying it's the first time this has happened in movies, because I know that's not. It was made in 1978. But it was the first movie that I ever saw where the, well, I guess Well, I'm going to have to spoil it a little bit. Well, I really don't want to, but I mean, I don't know. Blackout, just fast forward like 5 minutes if you don't want to. If you don't want to hear the end of 78,
well, I think without giving away the end, I think you can imply sort of.
It was the first time I had ever seen things not work out the way that they traditionally work out in movies. I'll just say
right,
that.
Right.
And it's done in such a way that last shot.
Yeah.
Of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, to
which
my
is arguably the most famous shot in the movie.
Sure, I is to an 8 year old. And it has stuck with me, and it holds up on so many subsequent rewatches. I mean, it really fucked with me.
Yeah.
If I may be so eloquent, I had never seen anything like that before. I've seen many things like it since, where you go sort of dark with the end of a movie.
Well, that's almost the standard now.
I know, like... and to some degree, I mean, this is like a moment in time kind of thing. If I'd seen so many movies. And then saw, you know, Invasion of the Body Snatchers yesterday, maybe I wouldn't like it as much. But, you know, it's very personal for me, and I'll never forget. Like, I remember being in my basement, lights were off. Then Donald Sutherland did that thing that he does at the end of the movie, and I'm like, everything I know is wrong.
Yeah, right. Well, and throughout the movie, that movie plays that game of, like, you're pretty sure this person is going to make it.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And then over and over again, you're like, "Oh, come on!" Like they keep messing with you.
Yeah. And there's a lot about that movie that's like subtle, and you don't get clubbed over the head with a lot of sort of the action beats that have become very typical of movies like that nowadays, and even that just dull, forgettable Nicole Kidman, Daniel Craig remake that they did. Did you see The Invasion?
I've seen a few minutes of it, and again, like you said, they turned it into just an action movie.
It's gone from my mind. I remember seeing it, and that's all I remember. But anyway, right. I cannot speak highly enough about Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Nice.
It's just something that's always stuck with me, and it always will. And it's one of those seminal. If I can be so corny, it's just one of those seminal moments in my life as a movie consumer that I'll never forget. And it's made me, it's always kept me coming back, and it's always held up too. So.
It's one of the few remakes that I kind of prefer to the original too. Again, that's just a matter of taste because the original is very good and lots of people will be upset that I even said that, but I do prefer the Philip Kaufman version.
Me too. And I have seen the old one too, but the new one just has a little bit more to say to me.
Right.
Yeah.
You mentioned Mars Attacks, and I did put that on the list because I don't think there's any like purer alien invasion movie than Mars Attacks. I mean, it's not a metaphor for anything. It's not there's no real plot to speak of. It's literally just Martians show up and they want to kill us. And when I saw it, and it's one of the few that's sort of a comedy
sort of a comedy?
Well, you know, there are funny elements to some of the other movies, but this one is obviously a straightforward comedy.
I understand.
When I saw Mars Attacks in 96, I actually didn't like it. It sort of left a bad taste in my mouth.
Did you want more from it, or was it just not funny to you or something?
I don't know. Part of it was that I wanted more from it, but part of it is that the movie plays a very specific game that I wasn't ready for, which is to introduce a character. You spend a little time with them. They're pretty much all loathsome, but, you know, they're all just killed off. That's the movie. Like, here's a famous actor that you recognize. They have a few lines of dialogue, and then they're killed by an alien. And it's basically just the same joke repeated over and over again, and I couldn't appreciate that at the time. And now, the more I see it and the older I get, the more I appreciate that movie. I mean, that movie has a very dark view of mankind, because I like that the aliens in the movie are really only two things. They're mean and they're stupid. And we don't usually get stupid aliens.
That's a good point.
They really are. And yet, what's amazing about the movie is that all of the humans are even stupider. And that's the thing. Like, it's a really sick joke that Tim Burton plays, because as stupid as the aliens are, basically every human in the movie is even stupider than the aliens, and that's why they end up, you know, being killed. Whether it's because they're trying to ingratiate themselves with the aliens, or because like Jack Black just can't fire a gun and he gets killed, or they're trying to do something heroic like Michael J. Fox and he gets killed. Even the, you know, even the way that the sort of perhaps the dumbest human character in the movie ends up sort of saving the day, and it's by accident, you know. So it really is sort of a nihilistic movie, but it's very much, I think, an extension of Tim Burton's worldview. And obviously that Tim Burton has been replaced by a pod person. So, but Mars Attacks, I think, is a lot of fun, especially if you have a fondness for this genre, as obviously you and I do.
You've hit on a lot of things that I would have that I would have applauded the movie for. So I would echo a lot of your sentiments. I too, when I first saw it, and when I have seen it since, I am always so impressed with the utter futility of any sort of resolution that anybody is coming up with. You hinted at it until eventually it happens, like you said, by accident. I mean, there are that whole Jack Nicholson speech is great that he gives to the, you know, the alien commander, if you want to call it that. And I actually, but like you said, with the games that the movie has played up to that point, you can tell that that's not going to work. And I don't feel that bad about spoiling that part of it, because you already sort of kind of couched it in that's sort of the point of the movie. But I do like that. One thing that was always very impressive about Mars Attacks to me is not only the really impressive cast, obviously, but my suspicion there is that, you know, Tim Burton probably just called in a ton of favors. A lot of people in that, like in that movie, are people that have been in movies of his,
and
before,
they're only working for a few days, you know, because everybody has kind of a bit part.
Exactly, and what I like about it is that even the people who aren't sort of in really goofy movies like that, they've all done some extent of some sort of comedy, I think, but everyone is like really game for what's happening. I don't think you really run the risk when you have an ensemble cast like that of someone somewhere phoning it in. And I don't think anyone does that. I think that was always really impressive to me from a direction standpoint, that he got a funny and willing performance out of pretty much everyone. Yeah. Whether you can say whether or not all the jokes work or it's not as funny as it's supposed to be, you can't say that anyone's phoning it in, which is something that you run into a lot.
I will say,
do you disagree?
I don't disagree. Although I will say that Nicholson plays two parts, and one of them, I don't think works at all. I think he's being really broad and working hard to be funny. I don't think he's phoning it in, but I think it's just a miss. I think they tried something and it failed.
I think it's sort of
ill-conceived. I think he's trying too hard to be funny, and the movie is sort of like, look at this, Nicholson's playing two parts. Isn't that funny? Look at the funny nose he has on. Look at the funny wig. So I don't think that part is funny at all, but I think him as the president is very funny.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think that was the scene that left such a bad taste in my mouth in 96. And I'm wondering, as we're talking about it now, if it was because I was sort of coming off of Independence Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I just expected more of a sort of conventional alien invasion movie with like a plot and some heroes. And in Independence Day, I mean, the president is the hero. He flies the fighter jet and he gives these great speeches. And in Mars Attacks, the president, spoilers for Mars Attacks, is a buffoon who gives a hollow version of the same speech and then is killed. And I don't know, the me in 96 apparently held sort of the presidency in a more sort of sacred place, because I was like, I don't want to watch a movie where the president is just an idiot and then murdered. And now I have no problem with it, because again, I get the joke, and maybe I just didn't then. I don't know. But
that is really interesting. I've never had any respect for the office of the presidency, so that's not a problem for me.
Listen, I was coming off Independence Day. The president was saved the day. He flew the jet.
He did. He's a fighter pilot, Patrick. He belongs in the air. Anyway,
I think we're down to one more, right?
Oh yeah, but I'm going first, right? Oh yeah, and then you go, yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, I can already tell what your number one is, and I'm glad because I left mine. I left it off because I knew you would put it on. Anyway, yeah, yeah. My number one, even though I said not in order, I do think I would say that this is my favorite movie on my list. So for whatever that's worth.
Mine is the same. So look at us.
So there you go.
Saving the best for last.
Yeah.
Thank you, Vanessa Williams.
For everything, really.
Mostly for Eraser.
And those nudie pictures that lost you your Miss America crown.
Yes, but mostly Eraser.
And that's it. We covered everything.
Yep.
Good night, everybody. No. All right. And I realize that my number one selection does sort of technically violate the parameters that we laid out at the beginning of the show because the aliens aren't necessarily mean. But I'm putting it in because
Listen. Once upon a time in the West, Madman lost his damn mind in the West.
Lost his goddamn mind in the West.
All right, so violate the parameters. Go ahead.
It's District 9.
Oh, yeah.
I love District 9. Much like my praise of Signs, I will say that when I saw District 9, first of all, I knew almost nothing about it. I somehow avoided their crazy viral marketing campaign. I avoided all of that. All I knew is that there was a movie called District 9, and I heard that it involved aliens. That's all I knew. I didn't know that there was a faux documentary to it. I didn't know that there was a lot being said about race and, apartheid. You know, sort of third world politics and apartheid. Yeah. So that was all new to me. And again, sort of a time and place sort of condition in that if someone else brought something different to District 9, and a lot of people like District 9 a lot, even probably those who knew a whole bunch about it. But I have never seen a story told that way. I have never seen the protagonist in an alien invasion movie, even if they don't invade, whatever, their ship breaks. I've never seen a protagonist evolve in that way. I have never seen a character who, and again, not knowing anything, I didn't even know that the guy was going to be like, I mean, at the beginning of the movie, Wickus, the protagonist, who ends up being the protagonist, seems like the guy in so many of these other movies who just gets killed, like 2 seconds in, because he is like just this bumbling bureaucrat who is placed in charge of sort of, you know, organizing the aliens, which is just like the most ridiculous sentence anyone's ever said. And like, that is a character that in a lesser movie just gets totally offed without a thought. And for him to, and I won't spoil this, but I mean, he goes from being completely bumbling idiot to legitimately identifiable and, you know, sort of compassionate character that I could not be more invested in if I tried. And that has another killer last shot that leaves me just like, did this movie just go where I think it went? And like,
The last few moments of that movie pissed me off though, because I agree that the last shot is great, but then they don't trust you to understand the implications of that last shot. So they have to underline it 6 or 7 times with some extraneous dialogue that I think is unnecessary. I think that last shot would be sort of more poetic and beautiful if they weren't pointing an arrow at it saying, get what this is.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, I didn't see that as disrespecting the audience or not thinking that they would get it. If you want to say that they're a little heavy on the message, that's fine.
See, but I think I felt like that movie gave you a ton of credit and then at the very end chickened out and thought, oh, people aren't going to get this.
That's why I maintain that it didn't do that. I mean, I think it was maybe a little heavy-handed with its message, but not out of like disrespect.
I think it was.
Anyway, I also think that and for whatever this is worth, if you want to count this as a criteria for our lists, I think, and I don't have all of the budget numbers in front of me, I think you get the most bang for your buck from an effects standpoint out of any of the movies we've talked about. Because there are these action sequences and the way that they color these different weapons that they acquire, the alien weaponry is something that's like made a point of, you know, that it's just sort of made a very key plot point. And you don't ever really even think of that in a whole lot of other alien movies because they usually just have some some big gun that destroys everything. And while that does happen a lot in this movie, it's just they are sort of designed and executed in a very in very unique ways that sort of keep you guessing and just make the whole thing less predictable. And there's very little about the movie that's predictable in the first place, and that's part of it. My one criticism of District 9 is that, again, sort of, I guess sort of in your vein of not having the guts to follow through with something, I wish in an ideal world, and I realize the whole story can't be told like this, I wish the whole thing would have been in that mockumentary style. They start out
sure,
that way.
Sure, sure, sure.
And then there are parts of it that are then back into a, you know, just sort of a regular movie, like just a narrative, you know, thing. But that's a flaw that I don't even know if you call that a flaw. I mean, I guess I just wish it was a different way, but it doesn't make it worse for me.
Right. I always felt like that. I felt like that was kind of seamless. I understand what you're saying. I always felt like that was kind of seamless. And then that sort of gives the audience credit in that, I guess now we've been so indoctrinated to sort of these different methods of storytelling that we can actually handle switching back and forth, and it's not completely jarring. And I know there are some people who felt the same way, that they wanted it to be all one or the other. I think for different reasons than you're saying. I think there are some people who can't handle the switching back and forth.
Definitely.
Obviously you can. But I think for the most part that it's kind of sophisticated in that way, that it's willing to sort of bounce back and forth. Because I do sort of think at a certain point, had they continued with that sort of documentary format, you would start asking questions the way that people do on The Office. Like, why are they shooting all this? What's this
it
for?
Is,
you know what I mean?
It is constricting in a way.
At a certain point, it starts calling attention to itself, and I think right. You're limited in what you can do and the scope of who you can follow and where you can follow them if you are constantly aware of the presence of a camera crew. You know what I mean?
That's true.
So and they kind of needed to make that switch.
Yeah, and to some extent, I'm arguing about something that, for all I know, like you're saying, wouldn't have worked at all, and maybe what we actually got is the best way you can tell that story.
Right.
Maybe, and probably is, because it's great.
When I first saw the movie, it was really a testament to the performance of the lead actor. Like you said, at the beginning, he's so Charlton Copley? At the end of the movie, having gone through everything we've gone through with him, they cut back to sort of a scene from the beginning when he's just this goofy sort of yes man. And it wasn't really until that point that I realized how good his performance was, because I was like, oh my gosh, that's where we started and
same
look where
guy.
We are. That was amazing. And the year that came out, which was what, 2009?
I think so, yeah.
Was also the year that Avatar came out. Mm-hmm. And at the time I was sort of very anti-Avatar. And
we all know how you've come around.
and documented
in the annals.
I had all this long sort of like speech about how District 9 and Avatar were sort of the same movie, but one was such a better example and such a more interesting and ambitious movie.
I can see you just like launching into that at parties.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I was like, no, look, there are so many similarities, but District 9 is so much better. District 9, I still obviously think is better.
Love District 9. I imagine most people have seen it. If you haven't, for crying out loud, do yourself a favor.
It's really, really good. And obviously, as you had sort of hinted at, my number one is John Carpenter's remake of The Thing. Sorry to have two John Carpenter movies on the list. Sorry to have several remakes.
Hey, don't. No.
Speaking of remakes that are superior to the original, nothing against The Thing from Another World, but John Carpenter's The Thing is one of my very favorite horror movies of all time, possibly one of my favorite movies of all time. We talked about it, I think, on the Green Lantern podcast recently, because Mike had just watched it, and I spoke of it last year when we did a show about our favorite horror movies, so I've covered The Thing sort of in depth. But again, it's an interesting contrast in the way that we sort of compare Independence Day and Mars Attacks, how one is the happy, positive version, even though, you know, most of the world is destroyed and tens of thousands of people die. Independence Day somehow is still the sunny alien invasion movie.
I know.
And Mars Attacks is the dark, hateful one. The Thing came out in 82, the same year as E.T., which is an alien comes to Earth and he wants to be our best friend and take care of us and eat candy with us. And then The Thing also comes out, which is an alien comes to Earth and wants to take over our bodies and like mutilate us into these weird shapes. And it's incredibly gory and incredibly dark, incredibly bleak. There are few movies bleaker than The Thing when you consider the implications of that last shot. And I just think it is sort of timeless. The effects, I think, still hold up. You got to have kind of a stomach for it. Most of the movies, I think District 9 is probably the second goriest movie we've mentioned, and certainly has its moments, but it's nothing most people couldn't handle. The Thing is on another level entirely. And The Thing obviously skews way more towards horror than I think any of the other movies we've talked about.
Definitely. Did you have more to say on The
Thing? No, I've gone on and on about
The Thing. Hypothetically, you could keep going forever. Yeah, probably. Yeah. I could not agree more in terms of the effects. I actually just caught it on, it was on TV not that long ago, and I probably haven't seen that movie in like, not nearly as often as I should have. It's probably been about 5 years. And yeah, the way just, you know, when the head sprouts
was ripped off by Robert Rodriguez in The Faculty.
I would say we've already covered one movie that pulls off that trick to a much lesser extent, without as much success. But yeah, all of that. I mean, I don't know if it's just because they're all in camera and, you know, just an actual real thing.
Right.
But there's like, the effects in The Thing are to the point where it's like, you're not even really saying this is good for the time. Like how you were saying with the original War of the Worlds.
Right.
I mean, it really holds up, and I think the thing with The Thing, I almost just said it again. The aspect of The Thing that always resonated with me, and again on catching a little bit of it not that long ago, is just the way it creates an atmosphere. You talked about how it's one thing to have a movie about an alien that comes to Earth and does horrific things to human beings and replicates them and just does all this awful, repugnant shit. And then to have a movie like that and set it in Antarctica, you know, I mean, there's so much being said about, you know, the way that movie views the world, like in setting it there. You could set it anywhere, hypothetically.
Right.
But just there's just this feeling of hopelessness and, you know, as you said, you know, bleakness that sort of lords over everything that happens. It reminds me, the only movie that does that as well as The Thing is a movie that's not as good as The Thing, in my opinion, but also very good, and that's the original Alien.
Yeah.
Which is not on either of our lists because it takes place on a spaceship and not on
Earth.
Right.
Alien not coming to Earth.
Not coming to Earth, therefore not on the list.
Right.
But that's another one where there's a palpable sort of relentlessness about the alien in question.
And again, it comes down to location too. Most of the other movies we've talked about obviously are way opened up, with the exception of like maybe Signs, but that these movies are very much confined to this claustrophobic space where there's an alien on the loose.
Yeah.
And I scribbled down a couple sort of honorable mentions that obviously wouldn't go in the top five, but alien invasion movies that I still like. The original Day the Earth Stood Still. I've never seen the remake, but the original obviously is a classic for a reason. I had District 9 on there. The first Predator, not Predator 2.
Supposedly. Oh, that was on my list. Yeah. That's another one that has in. I think when I evaluate movies that I've seen a bunch of times, I weigh the rewatchability factor like way too heavily. That's like a big it's a big thing for me, and I never. Do not finish Predator when it's on TV.
Nice.
I love Predator. Yeah. I also want to lobby for a quick second on behalf of The Arrival.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That
movie's very flawed, but it's rare to get sort of thoughtful science fiction.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I want it, what was that, 97 or something?
Yeah, maybe 96, 97.
Something like that. And that's, you know, that movie did some different things, and it had a very credible, like, I remember thinking that Ron Silver was really good as sort of the human face of the alien enemy.
Right, well, it's an alien invasion movie that really isn't like an action movie. It's more just about like dialogue and ideas.
It's very contemplative. Yeah. It has the effects are not great, but right. I do remember the first time their legs bend the wrong way. They nail that shit, and I'm like, whoa.
Which was used to much greater effect in Black Swan. But yeah, when the little kid does it at the end, it doesn't work.
No, but when he first does it,
When I was a kid,
I'm like, I wonder what their chairs look like. that was the first thing
I believe that's what they wanted you thinking at that moment.
True.
I like the first two Critters movies, actually, for different reasons. But Night of the Creeps from 1986, which combines sort of the alien invasion movie with the teen movie with the zombie movie. If you haven't seen that, that's a ton of fun.
That's rare. That's rare to pull off.
Yeah, and last but not least, once again continuing my status as a Toby Hooper apologist, Life Force from 1985, originally called Space Vampires, aliens who come down to space and take over London and turn everybody into crazy zombies. I know that it's flawed, but I actually really like Life Force.
Speaking of things that are flawed, I have. On my honorable mentioned list, and I only didn't, no, well, I shouldn't say I only didn't put it on because of this, but part of it was because I didn't want to have two Will Smith alien movies. I think the first Men in Black has a lot to offer.
I like that movie a lot.
And that there was, that also has really good effects, by the way. Have you rewatched Men in Black? It's great.
I think it's a very rare case of, the special effects comedy that works. There's it only really a handful, Ghostbusters being obviously the template, but Men in Black, I think, is maybe the next most successful effects-driven comedy.
I think I can honestly say that that's the funniest he's ever been in a movie, I want to say.
Maybe. Bad Boys 2. He's kind of a hoot in Bad Boys 2.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I think I just like Men in Black better than Bad Boys 2.
I'm joking about Bad Boys 2. Oh, he's not...
You don't like the scene where he interrogates the
where he tells the kid he's gonna rape him or something? Is that what you're talking about?
And pulls a gun on him and points it in his face.
It's funny because he wants to go out on a date with Martin Lawrence's daughter.
What a ridiculous proposition.
Men in Black also has a Will Smith rap song that's not nearly as good as the Wild West rap song. The movie is way better. But the song, if I could just switch those two things, I tell you.
They are both, however, like Motown covers, which is interesting.
Yeah.
The Men in Black song had some stupid dance that no one learned and all this shit. Wild West was not bogged down with any kind of that phenomenon. But
Men in Black 2, I hated. I see no reason for a Men in Black 3, and it's possible we're never going to get it because that movie is so
it's fine by me.
Plagued with problems.
That's fine by me, and I also had a very brief list of awful awful alien movies.
Go for it.
Men in Black 2 was on there.
Yeah.
A movie called The Forgotten with Julianne Moore was on there.
Yes. Which I
think we actually saw that together a million years ago.
Yeah, we on sure accident. Did.
We
yeah,
showed
yeah,
up
yeah.
the same. I went there with my mom, and you went there with your wife.
Boy, I forgot about that movie.
Was she your wife at that point?
I don't think so, I don't know. When
anyway,
it's
fitting that you forgot The Forgotten.
That was a movie, though, that had a decent trailer, and then turned out to... Because you're like, boy, I wonder what's going on. The answer, boring aliens. Okay,
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that one way for for your alien movie to fail is to have the aliens be a secret, and that's what's revealed. That's never... Because people are always going to have the same reaction of...
Kingdom of the Crystal Skull?
Aliens? Yeah, exactly.
I can think of one example where you're wrong, but I don't want to say what that example is because it spoils the end of that movie.
Okay.
But there's a movie, and I don't think a lot of people like it, but I do. It stars a certain actor that I really like that a lot of people like.
The one thing about The Forgotten that I want to say, it was the first of three out of four Julianne Moore projects that centered around her losing children, which I thought was very funny.
Freedom Land,
and then Children of Men. Now, in Children of Men, she had already lost her child.
Right.
But she was still, like, a person who was bereaved by losing a child and motivated her actions. I just thought that was really weird. It was, like, three out of four movies in the mid to late 2000s. Anyway, The Forgotten sucks.
Yes, it does.
So,
Evolution, is that anywhere on your list? That has Julianne Moore.
That's
a special effects comedy that doesn't really work.
I liked Evolution though, but really? not enough to make an honorable mention, and okay. I also didn't hate it enough to put it on the bad list.
Yeah, so. You might be right. It might be right smack in the middle. my other bad list. My bad list were all movies that were mentioned. I had Mac and Me and Strange Spaced Invaders and yeah. And Skyline. So,
what have we accomplished here? I wonder.
You've admitted that you like Wild Wild West.
Yep.
You completely misread The Breakfast Club.
True.
And I've apologized for not one but two Tobe Hooper movies that nobody likes. So, I don't know. I feel like we've destroyed pretty much all of our credibility here at F This Movie.
Certainly mine.
Thanks to this one show. yeah, so that's it. These are all alien invasion movies that you should watch perhaps instead of Transformers Dark of the Moon.
Yeah. I'm certainly so excited about Battle LA.
Yeah, definitely. still excited about Cowboys and Aliens. Still love Super 8. So the genre is alive. It's just you have to kind of pick and choose, you know.
If it involves a walking head, it's going to end up on one of our lists.
Thanks everybody for listening. And Alex, take us out with a little Wild Wild West.
Wickety whip wow wow, wickety whip wow 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 west, Jim West, Desperado, Rough Rider, no you don't want nada, none in this, six gun in this, brother running this, Buffalo Soldier, look it's like I told you, any damsel that's in distress, be out of that dress when she meets Jim West. Thanks for listening everybody.